7:35 in the morning. You're listening to Upfront. My name is Brian Edwards Tiekert. Well, Washington, D.C. may be entering a period of divided government after a year in which not much got through Congress anyway. But in California, tons of new policies that sailed through the state legislature are going to be taking effect in 2019. And one of the more notable turns in state politics is that the stranglehold that police lobbies have had on policymaking that affects police and police unions was somewhat broken in 2018. A series of measures passed that are going to dramatically increase the amount of public access to police records. I'll give you a quick summary of them. AB 748, which was proposed by Phil Ting of San Francisco, is going to require the release of body camera footage within 45 days of a police shooting or when a police officer's use of force causes death or great bodily harm. This is something that families of people who died at the hands of police might have waited years for and have had to go to court over in the past. SB 1421, introduced by State Senator Nancy Skinner, who represents the district this station is in, will allow public access to police records in use of force cases, as well as investigations that confirmed on-the-job dishonesty or sexual misconduct. Again, something journalists could not get access to in the past. You can find a lot of information about any form of convicted criminal in this state, but not anybody who is given a badge and a weapon by the state who might have misused them. And Senate Bill 978, that's going to require police departments and local agencies to post on their websites their current standards, policies, practices, operating procedures, and education and training materials that it would otherwise take a Public Records Act request to secure. You may require, when we were looking into the death by taser of Chinedu Okobi, in the custody of San Mateo sheriffs last year, we couldn't get the DA to tell us where to go to find out what the use of force guidelines were for tasers. He said he had his hands on it. He wouldn't release it. It wasn't up on the website of the sheriff's department. That is going to change as well. This has caused reporters who cover policing issues to unleash a slew of Public Record Act requests in the hours since midnight on New Year's Day. And we're joined in studio by one of them. Darwin Bond Graham is a staff writer with the East Bay Express. He won the Polk Award for his reporting on the Oakland Police Department sex crime scandal that saw three police chiefs ousted in less than 2 weeks. Darwin, thanks for coming in bright and early.
Good morning.
So, first of all, how many Public Records Act requests have you filed in the last 36 hours?
Almost 24, and I'll probably file another 24, you know, in the next day or two. There's just a huge backlog of stuff we don't know about, lots of police misconduct cases that were in the news that we need to know more about. So this is, for me right now, it's kind of like going back and making sure the history is completely filled in on certain big notable cases.
You want to walk us through some of them?
Yeah, sure. I mean, if you know anyone who followed what happened in Oakland a few years ago with the sexual exploitation scandal will remember multiple times the Oakland mayor saying, you know, publicly, oh, I cannot comment. I can't answer your questions. She would say this to reporters during press conferences because state law prohibits me from saying this. And the questions were, you know, basic things like who are the officers who, you know, were found to have sexually exploited this young woman? Who are the officers who were fired from the department for breaking policy, for violating policy? Even why did you fire your police chief? She kept, you know, the mayor of Oakland kept saying, he left for personal reasons. And later, I can't tell you anything about that. Well, that's all changed now, actually. So now we can learn about the very intricate details of all of that stuff by obtaining the non-exempt portions of those police officers' personnel files who were fired as a matter of, you know, that particular scandal. And in that case, I believe the new laws apply to that one because this would be in some of those instances, this would be sexual assault because these were police officers who sexually exploited a minor. So this was not a person who could legally consent. And then there were also sustained findings of dishonesty in various ways in that case. So we should be able to find out a lot more about the details of it. That's just one case. The Oakland Police Department has, you know, maybe about 5 to 10 of these very high profile cases over the past couple decades, going back to the Ryder's case of 2000, which we still don't know the full details of. So I'm kind of going back and digging into that stuff. I know a lot of other reporters who are, you know, trying to get records on things like the Rampart scandal in Los Angeles. There's a lot of stuff to look into in San Francisco. There's just a huge backlog, basically.
Right. I mean, so you reported the hell out of that sex exploitation scandal in the Oakland Police Department. You did name the names. You did pan down a pretty detailed narrative and chronology of what happened. And you did this without the benefit of any of the records that had been generated by actual professional investigations inside the Oakland Police Department?
Yeah, more or less. I mean, my reporting partner on that, Ollie Winston, and myself, we just chased human sources for the most part. You know, we couldn't file a PRA to say, hey, give us this rookie's personnel file. You know, we understand this rookie was just terminated from the department for a sustained finding of misconduct. And we couldn't ask for that file, you know, and that was hugely frustrating. And hopefully these new laws won't just allow reporters to more easily report these kind of stories. Hopefully it may even serve as a deterrent to police officers who might commit misconduct. I don't know that there's like any psychological, you know, cause to this today where a police officer might think, oh, well, because my personnel file is, you know, forever shielded from daylight by California state law, I can be a little crazier. That cops may or may not think that way. But if any of them do, certainly that is completely extinguished now.
So how much wiggle room is there in the language of the new bills? Like what fights do you expect to be having with police departments over what exactly they're obligated to release?
Great bodily force. That's an interesting term. What does that mean? I just filed a PRA with Oakland about a recent vehicle pursuit in which multiple officers were chasing some juveniles who were driving around in a car. Some of those the chase resulted in the car crashing. One of the juveniles fell out, tried to jump out of the vehicle, hit another vehicle, was paralyzed, is in a wheelchair, can't speak anymore. I think the way it's described vaguely in a couple reports I've read, that will count as great bodily harm. So I filed a PRA yesterday with the Oakland Police Department to try to get that internal affairs case. In other instances, I think great bodily harm is going to be, you know, much debated. What exactly is it? In 2003, the Oakland Police, basically shot a bunch of beanbags and wooden bullets into a crowd of protesters at the Port of Oakland. And there's some famous photographs of people with these horrible bruises on their bodies. Is that going to be interpreted as great bodily harm requiring disclosure of police disciplinary records as a result of that crowd control operation during that protest? I don't know. I'm going to find out with the request I filed. I think other stuff in the law that people may not realize quite yet is that the dishonesty and sexual assault files, these have to be sustained. And to be sustained, so police misconduct cases, there's multiple different findings that can result. Exonerated, when the officer is proven not to have carried out the conduct. Not sustained, which is to say maybe it happened, but probably not. Sustained, and there's like one or two other findings usually that departments have. And sustained is basically like the preponderance of evidence. We think, yes, this police officer committed misconduct. So we're not going to be able to get like a not sustained, just allegations. But sometimes those allegations, there's a lot of truth to them. And it's just that they couldn't be proved. So I think there's going to be, there's still an ocean of records out there. The not sustained and the just merely allegation stuff that maybe wasn't properly investigated fully by an internal affairs agency in a department that we're just not going to be able to get our hands on.
Now, when it comes to those areas where there's wiggle room or some ambiguity about what should be released under the new laws, like who are you going to be fighting with? Is it going to be the police agency or are they going to like call the local police union before they release records
no.
to you and say, do you have a problem with this?
Yeah. My experience is the police agencies themselves, The police unions are really hostile to these new laws, obviously, and that goes to, you know, the San Bernardino County deputy sheriffs, you know, challenging the new laws' retroactive applicability. But police agencies themselves and the administrations of police departments, for the most part, I don't think they like the new law. They see it as a burden on their resources. It's going to take a lot of time to fulfill these requests, but they're not nearly as hostile as police unions. And I don't know the extent to which there's any coordination or pressure being put on
or prior review.
I don't know. My impression is, and the survey I've been doing with some records requests in advance of the new law is that most of the large agencies are pretty far ahead in determining how these new laws affect their work in fulfilling public records requests. And I expect that they'll be complying with the new law fully. I've yet to see any agency in the Bay Area that seems to be resistant to these new laws, although I'm certain many police unions are.
There is active litigation. You just mentioned it. And it would basically impact every single case you have already filed a Public Records Act request over, because the litigation is on the question of whether this transparency applies to anything before 2019.
Right.
Do you think that provides political cover for agencies to deny your request till the lawsuit plays out?
Yeah, I mean, certainly they could say, you know, there's pending litigation, but there's nothing in the Public Records Act that says that if someone's, you know, filed a lawsuit, you know, or asked the Supreme Court to review the interpretation of a new law, there's nothing in the Public Records Act that says that an agency is then allowed to hit the pause button on that request. So as of today, the law is the law. The Supreme Court has not said anything yet. So if any agency is out there and they delay a records request simply because a union somewhere has a different interpretation of the law, that would be illegal for that public agency to do that.
Speaking of Darwin Bond Graham, he's a staff writer with the East Bay Express, shared the Polk Award with his reporting partner, Ali Winston, for their reporting on the Oakland Police Department sex exploitation scandal that saw three police chiefs ousted in less than 2 weeks. And what we're discussing is a slew of laws that are taking effect this week in California that will dramatically increase the public's access to police records, particularly in use of force incidences and disciplinary proceedings against police officers. Darwin, I guess there's a global question that I haven't understood, which is how did California, which today politically is possibly the leftist state in the union, wind up with some of the most restrictive laws regarding police transparency?
Yeah, in the 1970s, police unions pushed pretty hard against the existing standards back then, which there in the 1960s, early 70s, there was a lot of access to the administrative records of police departments. So, you could conceivably obtain disciplinary files regarding police officers showing what misconduct they had committed. They were able to get in the penal code and the evidence code, they were able to insert language in the 70s that basically said all personnel records of any peace officer in the state are confidential, except when an attorney files a pitchess motion in civil or criminal litigation to try to obtain relevant misconduct material that might sustain, you know, findings of misconduct in that police officer's personnel file that reasonably would have bearing on pending litigation. So, for example, if a person was arrested by the police and is being tried for a crime, and if the arresting police officer who's going to testify at that person's trial has in their personnel file a sustained finding that they lied in a previous case or investigation, then there's the defense has the right to obtain that portion of the personnel file. And they have that right under the basically under the Brady rule, which was a U.S. Supreme Court case. So that's the only way really that police personnel files have ever been able to come into the light of day. Then in the late 70s, 80s, some cities in California created these, you know, police review commissions. Los Angeles has had one for a while. Oakland's created it in like 1980, I believe. And those police review commissions were able to then hold, you know, separate misconduct investigations and hearings separate from the police departments. And those hearings were open to the public. And so we actually then got this new window into police misconduct cases. But then in 2006, we had this disastrous California State Supreme Court ruling, Copley, in which the Supreme Court said, actually, no, newspapers and the public in general have no right to get police personnel records that might be in possession of these commissions. So they closed off that avenue entirely and everything kind of went black again. So, you know, we've been operating for over a decade in which there's been virtually no avenue to look inside police departments at misconduct files.
So you've been covering police and police abuses for years here in the East Bay. What are the biggest unanswered questions for you that the records you can get your hands on now might help answer?
Who shot Scott Olson? I mean, there's really simple stuff like that.
Scott Olson was on the front lines of a Occupy Oakland protest when the Oakland police were evicting the encampment in front of City Hall, hit in the head with a tear gas canister.
Yeah, or a beanbag round or something, and caused great bodily harm. I think without a doubt, I don't think anyone can say that, you know, his life wasn't seriously affected by being shot like that. And then as you know, these Good Samaritans were coming to help him as he's laying on the ground bleeding, another Oakland police officer, Rob Roche, threw a stun grenade or something like that into this group of people, and it blew up. And this was all on video. And I'm not sure. I mean, basically, it's possible we could find out who actually shot Scott Olson if we can get those internal affairs files. Although, you know, maybe the Oakland Police Department, this is sort of a problem with the new law, right? Is the answers we're going to get to those kind of questions are only as good as the internal affairs investigations that were originally conducted in the first place.
Because you can't, for instance, get your hand on the discharge logs of the projectile weapons that were on site.
Yeah, or you maybe the internal affairs investigators should have, if they were, you know, investigators who if they knew what they were doing. I think it's understood that there have been some instances in which police departments have not conducted thorough internal investigations of misconduct. Biggest example would be, again, the sexual exploitation scandal that occurred a few years ago in Oakland. I mean, literally, a federal judge wrote in an order that he thought the police department bungled that investigation internally, and he appointed his own independent investigator to fulfill it. So there's a few other cases in Oakland that I think are very well known, but we could learn a bit more about the beating and subsequent death of Jerry Amaro. He was beaten up during an operation in Oakland in the early 2000s. He died days after being beaten up by several cops and arrested. He died in his friend's basement. It was tragic. He died as a result of his injuries that these police officers gave to him in this beating. I think we can find out more about that case. And there's just a lot of stuff like that out there, these unanswered questions that we can go back and take a hard look at.
It raises the point you just made about the records you can get your hands on only being as good as the investigation. It kind of raises a broader global question, which is, if police departments are now facing greater scrutiny, does this create a perverse incentive to not investigate, or to not investigate well and not generate the records in the first place?
Maybe, but, you know, there is a difference between the police administration and the police rank and file and the unions. And I think even the unions are going to ultimately say that it's in their members' interest to work in departments where serious misconduct isn't really permitted. And a lot of police administrations definitely are going to take that approach. They don't want corrupt cops working there. So I doubt that we're going to see a decline in the quality of investigations, if anything, because these records are now open to the public. I think there's all the more reason to see them even more seriously investigated in a more professional manner.
I'm also curious about the stuff that you're not going to have to request, the standards, policies, practices, operating procedures for use of force and things like tasers are supposed to be on everybody's website.
Yeah.
That opens the door to doing comparisons of who has well-articulated policies, who has policies that create giant open doors for abuse, and kind of ranking police departments across the state.
It does. I think, though, there's a company that has almost a monopoly on drafting and promulgating police policies called Lexapol. So I think a lot of people will see that a lot of departments in California are just like using this boilerplate like policy manual. But a lot of departments do have their own custom policies. And having them posted on a website is great. There's no reason why these policies shouldn't be readily available to the public. I've filed requests over the years for a number of policies from different Bay Area departments, and sometimes it's taken weeks on end to get them. Recently, the Oakland Police Department told me that one of their policies is actually secret. We're not allowed to see it.
Which policy?
Yeah, it has to do with barricaded and armed subjects and how the department responds to a situation in which a person is barricaded and armed. So say, you know, a gunman in a house or something. This was related to the shooting of Joshua Pollock, the young man who was killed by several Oakland police officers in March of last year. And he was armed and lying on the ground asleep, and he was surrounded by police officers. And when he woke up, he was shot. And the department, to their credit, actually released the body camera videos of the officers in that incident less than a year after after the incident occurred. But the policy itself, which determines whether those officers followed it or not, we can't see the full policy because the police department said, well, if we showed the public, they would know our tactics and how we respond to that sort of thing.
And, and everybody who's planning to become a barricaded armed suspect would suddenly know how to write their playbook.
Right, because they're going to read all the police policies. Seriously doubtful, but there is a balance to be struck to some extent. You know, the public has a right to know, but also the government agencies have a right to sometimes withhold certain information if the public interest is better served by not just throwing it all out there.
So this is not everything that police accountability advocates were asking for in Sacramento last year. A lot of this language got watered down before it could be passed. Some bills in a similar vein got shot down altogether. You know, in terms of your interests as a journalist in transparency and getting your hands on more records, what are the battles still to be fought?
Oh, wow. I would say that SB 1421 is a huge leap forward, but a big problem with the California Public Records Act is that it has no teeth. So you or I, as journalists, we can file public records requests all day long, and we can cite, you know, we can cite the section of the law. You know, you have 10 days to give me these records. You can maybe extend it 14 days. You can maybe charge me this like minimal reproduction fee, but at the end of the day, you have to give me these records. It's the law. Well, if an agency just totally ignores you, and actually that just happened to me, a couple rural counties in Northern California, I asked their sheriff's departments for some records, and, it's been almost a year now and I've not even gotten a determination. So it's something to follow up on. But, when that happens, the only recourse is you or I go out and get an attorney and spend money and sue them. And that's really difficult in an era of news gathering where a lot of reporters don't have access to attorneys. A lot of news organizations don't have attorneys on staff. So, you know, in the Bay Area, there's only a couple newspapers and some TV stations that have, you know, legal counsel that can move quickly and file a lawsuit to compel an agency to release these records. So yeah, these new laws are great, but updating the Public Records Act so that there's actually a way to really hold government accountable without relying on, you know, news organizations that have dwindling resources to go after them, That would be sort of on my wish list.
Yeah. Like some sort of provision that let attorneys automatically recover their fees in one of those suits.
Yeah. Or maybe even a process that doesn't require filing a lawsuit in a superior court.
Some state agency you could say appeal to and say, hey, this police agency isn't meeting my request.
Yeah, here's all my evidence of it, you know, and then let's have a, you know, so it's basically some way that doesn't require me to get an attorney, because attorneys are expensive, you know. And in some cases, you need an attorney for sure. But something like the administration of the Public Records Act, if there's not a legal dispute, if it's simply an agency is violating the letter of the law by not responding to a request, there needs to be some way to like bring them into accountability.
All right. Darwin Bongram, that's all the time we have. Thanks for coming in.
Yeah, thanks for having me.